For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, welcome everyone. This is the Haftorah for Parshas Balak this week. It's a short Haftorah, but very powerful, lots of lessons. The reason for this Haftorah is relatively obvious, because it actually mentions the story with Balak and Bilam at the very end of the Haftorah. And that's really the lesson of the Parsha. It mentions it in a very interesting way. This Haftorah is about the end of time, right before the Mashiach comes. And we find these Haftorahs fascinating because we believe that we're at the end of time. In other words, as far as history goes, all the things that have had to have happened, you know, the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash and the exile and all the different things that have happened throughout history, more or less they've all come true. We're just waiting for that final, the end piece that'll happen when we'll... And not only that, but the end has already started, meaning it predicted for 2,000 years people have been waiting for Jews to come back to Israel. And the Jews were scattered all over the various empires, and they were saying, yeah, sure, you know, when's it going to happen? And we're living at a time when it's happening, that Jews are back in Israel. And not only that, Jews from all over the world are starting to come back. They've been Jews from Russia, Jews from Ethiopia, Jews from... And we're living through it, and it works very ho-hum about it, but we're living through the things that have been predicted that will happen at the end of times are starting to happen in our time. And we've even had the terrible predictions about the Holocaust and the things that will come and the birth pangs of the Messianic times. And so it's very interesting when you see a Haftorah that talks about what will happen in the Messianic times. But to some degree, we believe we're living through it. And many of the sages and the rabbis of within the last 50 years have felt that we're getting close. It's not just my idea, but many, many rabbis and sages have said this, that we're kind of at the end of time. And there's an idea also that, you know, when something important's about to happen or you're about to go on a big trip and you're all of a sudden it's time to go, all of a sudden there's 100 things to do. And things happen very quickly because that's what's happening now. It's kind of like history is moving very quickly. Nations that had, you know, were sitting, you know, took, you know, for many, many years, and now all of a sudden these nations are falling and dictators are falling and countries are, you know, things are happening. And so it's just very interesting how that goes. We'll get to the idea of why the message of Bilam and Balak is there. I want to suggest, but I think it's relatively obvious, there's a concept like this, that sometimes we are saved from something and we don't even know about it. In other words, somebody does us a big favor. And if that favor hadn't been done, who knows what would have happened. And we sometimes don't even know about it. And this was a time in our history where the Jewish people were coming out of Egypt and they were about to enter Eretz Israel. And the nations of the world, specifically Midian and Moab I was wondering if it was Ammon. I'll look in the parsha, we'll see. There were a few nations that got together, what they wanted to make a plan to destroy us. Because they saw us as a threat. And it was very interesting. The first thing they did was an intelligence analysis. What they did was they knew that the Jewish people was being led by Moshe Rabbeinu. So they researched Moshe Rabbeinu. They were trying to find out, if he's their leader, how can we overcome him? Where does his power lie? It's very interesting. It's ancient intelligence gathering. So it says that they went to Midian, and they researched Moshe Rabbeinu, and they said his power is in his mouth. He's not like a mighty warrior. He's not like his power is in speech. Because his words that he used draw people to him. And so they said, if that's true, we have to defeat him with speech. And therefore they went to Bilam, who was somebody that used speech. He figured, if we got to defeat a leader who's great in speech, who has powerful words, let's get the most powerful Gentile with words. And that's why they hired Bilam. And we really didn't even know this was happening. And many years later, we found out that they were trying to destroy us, and Hashem wouldn't let them. Hashem protected us, even though we're not aware of it. We're in a certain danger. You know, we're traveling, and a car's just about to hit us. And at the last minute, they brake. You know, they hit the brakes, or they notice us, or something caught. And what made them brake, and what made them see? Hashem put in their mind, no, you're not to harm them. And he makes that car slow down, or gives it, and the person decides to put his foot on the brake. And we don't even realize that our life was saved. And many occasions like this, that Hashem saves us from things. We came very close to something, and we didn't even know that we came close to being harmed or a danger or a worry. And over here, Bilam, and we'll see it in the Haftorah. We came very close to being harmed by him. The Moshe Rabbeinu knew how to get fine favor in Hashem's eyes, and he was the Jewish leader who knew how to do that. When we sinned, he helped. Help us apologize and get back in Hashem's good graces. Bilam had the power to get Hashem angry at people. It says that he knew the moment of Hashem's anger, so to speak. Again, we don't, you know, Hashem isn't really angry, but just like Hashem is beyond our understanding, there was an idea that he knew if there was a nation that somebody was angry with and they wanted him to curse, he knew how to figure out when the perfect time to do that. There's always good times and bad times. He knew the moment when a curse would be effective. And therefore, since he was trying to find the time to curse the Jewish people, but Hashem wouldn't let him. But the idea is that Hashem protects us sometimes and we're not even aware of it. But let's begin.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Did Moshe have a speech defect?
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So many people were attracted to their speech because of the way they talk. Oh, what did they say? Oh, I don't know, I can't tell you, but they spoke so beautifully. You know, they tell good jokes, they have a good... And then there are people that you're attracted to their speech, not because of how they said it, it's because the words themselves have real meaning. Or the sincerity. Sometimes you'll see a handicapped person speak, and they come so from the heart, and they're so truthful that it's hard to listen to the person, but the words have such meaning because you know they were so true. So Moshe Rabbeinu, even though he spoke, he wasn't it wasn't the way he said it. It was what he said. That would be the
point. In this parsha, even the donkey speaks.
Correct. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
You hear that often.
I was on a particular synagogue board when I was a rabbi, and we had meetings. And there's a pasuk in the parsha where it says Hashem opened the mouth of a donkey. Vayiftach Hashem es pi ha'asan. Hashem opened the mouth of a donkey. That's the pasuk. So in the meeting, there was different people that didn't necessarily like each other. Believe it or not, there could happen in a meeting. And so somebody at one side of the meeting occasionally would make a comment or have a point to make. And so someone on the other side of the table next to me would say the verse, knowing that the other person didn't speak Hebrew. He would say, when the person would say something, he would say, "Oh, Hashem opened the mouth of a donkey." And that was his way of saying, like, that the person doing the talking was... But luckily, I don't think anybody understood what he said except me, and I just ignored it. But that was the... Okay, let's begin. V'hayu sheiris Yaakov bekerev amim rabim. And the remnant of the Jewish people. We're a remnant. We lost a third of our people in the Holocaust. V'hayu sheiris, that's... many synagogues use the word sheiris because they're the remnant. Sheiris Israel. Sheiris Israel means the remnant. That's the in Baltimore. There's a big synagogue, Sheiris. But the word Sheiris means the remnant. The Jewish people, we're just a little piece of the much bigger communities. We're survivors. It'll be the survivors of Yaakov. The Jewish people will find themselves bekerev amim rabim. They'll find themselves in the midst of many peoples. and says a very interesting thing. So again, we're in that. We're in the midst of many different nations. Just walk, go through the airport, and you just watch the, you know, the hundreds of people from all over the world, and we're in the middle of all this. Ketal, and the Jewish people will be like du'u, me'es Hashem, kerevivim al yesef, will be a blessing to these nations. That just like dew makes things grow, the Jewish people will help start the economies. They'll help. They'll be very important to these countries they find themselves in, just like raindrops and dew. Aleis v'sholo yikabel ish, and they will help in ways that people really didn't think about or didn't hope for. V'lo yachol v'nei adam. And so Jews throughout different exiles in different countries have been behind many different initiatives and have saved those countries. What's interesting is throughout history, when Jews leave countries, when they're exiled from a country, that country like disappears off the map. And that happened to Spain. Spain was a world power. They got rid of their Jews. That was it. You know, they became a third world country. But many countries have been like that. Because
of anti-Semitism in Greece. I don't know how many Jews are left there.
Right, right. That's true. Yeah. But the Jews are like, they're like the dew. They're like a life-giving force. Then it seems like it repeats itself, but and then the question is, we know it doesn't repeat itself. So why is it saying it again? Verse 7. V'hayu sherish Yaakov begoyim. Bekerav amim rabim, and the Jewish people is in the midst of many nations. So there's a difference. In the earlier verse, it didn't mention Bagoyim. In verse 6, it said the Jewish people was a remnant amongst different peoples. And over here, it says we're in the midst of, we're in the middle of Goyim. So what's the difference? Some places we're in with peoples, just we're just another people, and then in some places they're hostile. In other words, we find ourselves in different countries, like you said. In some countries, you know, Jews have to be very careful. In other countries, we feel very welcome. We'll be amidst these people. And he's describing the Messianic times when the Jewish people will be ka'aryeh, like a lion, ke'behemoth yar, will be like leaders, will be like lions amongst the nations, kafir, ke'idrei tzon. And they'll be like a, the nations will be like the sheep. It'll be the opposite. You know, right now we're like the one lamb amongst a bunch of wolves, right? In other words, in danger. But in Messianic times, it'll be the opposite. We'll be the powerful ones. It's also interesting, you know, in the Middle East, Israel is the most powerful country. And throughout our history, we've always been on the weaker countries. It's a big blessing that Israel has the army that it does. And, of course, they're in danger. But it's when you think about it, we should be so thankful to Hashem that they have the great, you know, army, and they have nuclear weapons. And they're not the underdog anymore. Like, there were so many times in history where they were just, during the 67 war, many people thought that there would be another Holocaust. That was the way, in this country, the military analysts said Israel was finished. In the 48 war, for sure, people thought Israel wouldn't survive. So it's refreshing to even think that we can go into battle thinking that we're not the underdog or the...
But that's when they love us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they love that Jews, Jews that are... But in the Messianic times, we're not going to be there. We're going to be the lion. And that's what he says. If we can go and we can do just as we please. We can go into Lebanon. We can do what we please. We can go into Syria. We bomb away. We can go into any of these countries. Torah Yod Chal Tzarecha, your hand will be against the next against your enemies. V'kolei vecha yikoresu, and all your enemies will be cut off. Verse 10. V'hayu bayomahu. Now, in the pre-Messianic times, we'll need all the weapons we can get. But when the Mashiach comes, it'll be time to throw away the weapons. They're really just meant to protect ourselves. V'hayu bayomahu numa Hashem. It'll be on that day. V'krati susecha mikirbecha. Hashem says you won't need the horses anymore. The horses were the equivalent of the tanks. They were really for battle in the Middle East. V'avadati mecha v'secha. You won't need any more chariots. Verse 10. V'krati ori artzecha. People had to live behind big walls. They had to have security gates and heavy walls, Vasirosi, and Hashem will remove them. We'll be able to live out in the open. it's nice to be out in the open air and not have to live behind, you know, walls and fences and security. Vakrati 11. So in Messianic times, we will be secure. We won't need the weapons. But we'll also have to get rid of a lot of baggage. We'll have to get rid of Vakrati Kshafi Miyadecha. We have witchcraft, the hocus pocus. Witchcraft means different things. Sometimes there are different forces that people pay allegiance to. They have their little getchkas, their little things that they hope to. We'll have to get rid of that. Umaonanim, and there were different fortune-telling things. Lo yelach, we won't have. We're not into fortune-telling. We're not into good luck charms. We're going to throw all those things away. Vekrati psilecha, and the Jews also have their little statues, their little idols. Umatzvesecha mikibecha. And Hashem says, when we come back, we have a lot of idol worship, a lot of strange customs, strange religions, strange things to remove. And people will no longer bow down to the work of their hands. Verse 13, and I'll remove, they had these trees that they used to worship. One of the reasons that Jews have a hard time with Christmas trees are because historically the part of the idol worship was to worship the tree. And when the Christians wanted to attract the former idol worshippers, they loved the tree. So they made it part of their holiday in order to attract. So, but we have this, the prophets told us that this idea that God is in the tree or something, or they worship the tree, that we're very hostile to that. It's the Hanukkah bush is not, it didn't come from it's not a Jewish idea, really. We the idea of tree, we're going to cut off the trees, cut off the not the trees that are part of Hashem's beautiful world, but the trees that were worshipped. Hashem will destroy those cities that were dedicated to those idols. And Hashem will, what about people that don't want to give up the idols, that don't want to give up these things? So Hashem says, I'm going to deal with them with af and chema, fury and vengeance, strong stuff. It's interesting, the word af is like, somehow it has to do with the nose. It's almost like a fury in a person's nostrils. I don't know exactly where when a person's really angry if they like
in a flare.
They flare, right? I don't know. It's an interesting emotion. I've been so angry. I never really paid attention to my nose if I was the anger was in my nostrils or anything. But it you do find that wording of the Hebrew word for this word af is related to it's an emotion.
Breathing fire too.
Yes. Yes. I wonder where that is.
Dragons.
I guess, is that dragons or is that yelling or shouting or like a...
Dragons.
But somehow when a person is angry, like the people around them, it's almost visible. Like you just see it. It's just from their nose, their mouth, all their breathing, however, it's like a visible anger. So Hashem will deal with that. And again, those people that don't want to listen at that time... they're going to be a revenge. So it's a very short. The other prophets, Micha, we don't have that many prophets. He's one of the short prophets, or at least the works that we have from him are very short. And he gets right to the point, like Yeshayahu, he goes into these ideas at length. But he says the very basic that in Messianic times we'll find ourselves amongst the nations. There'll be hostile nations, there'll be good nations, we'll be a blessing into those nations, and those nations will be afraid of us, we'll be powerful. And we'll have to remove all the baggage of the exile, we'll have to remove the idols, we'll have to remove the witchcraft, which was, they worshipped the devil, a lot of the witchcraft was to the devil. And if they don't want to listen, then there'll be a vengeance. But now Hashem has a message for the Jewish people, a very important message. It'll be time for us to establish our nation serving Hashem, and it'll be important to focus on what the goals will be. So Shimu na as Asher Hashem Omar Kum. Listen to what Hashem says. Omar, he will say, Kum rive sahorim. It'll be time to... the Jewish people will have to get up and let their voice be heard. And they have to fight with the mountains, v'tishma hagvos, and the valleys. It doesn't mean to fight, but it means that you'll have to spread the message. And sometimes it's hard to spread the message over mountains and valleys throughout. In other words, there'll be ups and there'll be downs. But you'll have to get up and make sure that people hear what you got to say. Verse 2, Shimu Horim es Riv Hashem. And there'll be an argument. The world has a lot of learning to do. There's a lot of bad things in the world, and the mountains need to hear the message of Hashem. They son in most deorts. Ki Riv Lashem im Amo. And Hashem also has a message for his people. The Im Yisrael Yisvakak. And Hashem will lay it out to the Jewish people as well. There have been Jews that are estranged from Hashem, and they're Jews that need to fix things. And Hashem will declare to his people the following. Verse 3, Ami, my people, Me Asisa Lecha, what have I done to you? In other words, they're Jews. This was true after the Holocaust, that rebelled against Hashem, that felt that after the Holocaust, how can we serve Hashem? You know, look what happened to us. And Hashem will say to my people, what have I done to you? Does anybody, you know, there'll be a time to make the claim. If anybody has complaints, is there, if you look at history, Hashem has protected us and has preserved us. And it's true we've had a hard time, but many times we weren't worthy, you know, we deserved what, either we deserved it or in the end we'll understand Hashem's plan. Verse 4, Kilisika Meretz Mitzrayim, Hashem took us out of Egypt, Mibez Avonim, from a structure of slaves, PDC, he redeemed us. Veshlech Lefanecha, and Hashem sent us great leaders, as Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. It's interesting, in some places Miriam doesn't get the credit, she gets the credit over here. Miriam in last week's Parsha, where you hit the rock, the reason why the water disappeared was because Miriam died. And therefore, the water came in her merit, and people didn't appreciate her enough, which is often the case. We don't appreciate people when they're alive, and she died. All of a sudden, there was no water. The water, which was really what kept the Jewish people alive, came in the merit of Miriam. That was the so Hashem said, I sent Moshe and Aaron and Miriam in front of you. Ami, my people. Now, this is verse 5. This is where it relates to the Haftorah. Zochana, please remember. My Yoetz Boloch Melech Moav. We have complaints about the terrible punishments that the Jewish people had throughout history, but think of how many other things that happened. There were so many terrorist plots that were discovered and were stopped. And think about Boloch, what he wanted to do. Uma anu oso Bilam ben Boron, what Bilam answered, and Bilam said that Hashem won't let the nations destroy us. Min Shittim ad Gilgal, from Shittim and Gilgal, Laman das, we should realize it would be wrong for us to come to Hashem with complaints. In fact, the number of times Hashem has saved us and protected us, a person has to think about how many dangers he's been. The nature of it is we complain about the problems, but we never thank Hashem for all the successes and all the his protection. Verse 6, B'ma akadim Hashem. Now, when that time will come at the end of times when the Jewish people will have survived and we will have been given our land, the land of Israel back, and we will things will be at peace. So what will Hashem want from us? What is Hashem asking from us? So Ma'akanam Hashem, Ekaf lo kemarum, he's the God of the whole world, and he owns the whole world. So what are we going to offer him? So Hakdemana ba'olos ba'golim b'nei shana, do you think what he wants is some sacrifices, some little cows? Is that what he's been waiting for all this time? In other words, throughout history, he's waiting for the Jewish people to get their act together, to serve him correctly. Is he just waiting for a few little sheep or a few little cows? Hayirta Hashem ba'alfa elim kirvos nachle shemen. Do you think that Hashem, 1,000 sheep are going to do the trick? Is that what he wants? Or ha'esem b'chori pishi pri bitni chatos nafshi. Is that going to atone? Is that going to satisfy Can we do lots of oil, maybe? Is that what Hashem's looking for, is to sacrifice, like to just give him a donation? How much of a check do you want? Is that Mashiach's going to come? We're going to say, okay, how much is it going to cost me? You know, my dues are going to go up? Like, what, you know, the temple's going to be rebuilt. All right, we need donations for the rebuilding fund, right? So the nature of it is that some people think of religion in that way, like, okay, I'm going to have to pay. What am I going to pay? What's it going to... They're missing the point. It's not about paying. That's not what it is at all. So what does Hashem want? And in this, this is very often quoted, one of the most, probably the most famous verse that he's known for over here. And what he does is he crystallizes, you know, we do the 613 mitzvahs, which is a lot. And then you have rabbinic mitzvahs, and then you have many other things. And we have so many mitzvahs that sometimes we forget the essentials. Sometimes people, I don't work on Saturday, I don't eat pork, so that's good enough. No, that's not good enough. That's good. I mean, everything you do is good, but can't forget what Hashem wants from you. And he tells you, he says over here, Higi lacha adam. He says, I'll tell you. It's interesting also, he uses the word adam, which is, the original man, in other words, basic mankind. What does really Hashem want from a human? What is this all about? What is life really all about? Why does Hashem want from you? What can you give Hashem? Hashem, you know, you can't give him anything. He doesn't need your sheep. He doesn't need your cows. He doesn't need your oil. What does Hashem really want for you? And what? Not only does it what he wants from you. What is really good? How do you define good? What's considered good? So he says the following. He breaks it down into three parts. Ki'im, this is all you got to do. And it's not a lot. It's not that Hashem wants us to do things that are beyond us. He puts it into three categories. First of all, asus mishpat. The very first thing is don't be a crook. Don't be crooked. Don't be a robber. Do what's right. Do justice. Got to be people of justice. If do the right things, you know, that's mishpat. And by the way, you can't do extra until you do the basics. You can't do, you know, tzedakah and kindness and love and all that good flowery stuff if meanwhile you're not doing what you're supposed to do. And you might say that's obvious, but many of us, if we've worked for someone, sometimes we feel that we weren't always given what we were entitled. You know, maybe they didn't pay us the way they should. Maybe they did certain business dealings that were crooked. Maybe they had bills that they didn't pay, and they just didn't think about it because they thought they could get away with it. But the very first thing is integrity. That's the first thing. In other words, a person has to do what's right. Mishpat. Mishpat is the, everything else, you know, you could build on that, but you first have to make sure that, you know, you're doing the basics. You're not stealing from somebody. You're not being dishonest. And again, we always look at that and say, oh, of course. But then in other people, we see it's not so of course. There are plenty of people that are dishonest, or they don't satisfy their obligations, or they damage people, and they don't. So that's the first thing, is to do mishpat. Now, the second thing, it's kind of hard because it says that's all you got to do, but a person should love. It's interesting. He doesn't say to do kindness. You should love kindness. Avas chesed. A person has to work on themselves to love giving. To love to help people. That's really the Hashem wants us. If we're human, we're created, we're Adam, right? What does Hashem want from the human? He wants a person to learn to be a giver. And he wants a person to love that. A person has to learn to enjoy helping people. If a person they help someone and they don't need to be thanked, they don't need a plaque, they don't need to be honored, they should just have a love, a joy of, there's no greater joy than, you know, imitating a person. Then you're like Hashem, really, because you enjoy just, you know, chesed. You enjoy helping people. And then there's a third part. The third part is also interesting. Many people feel that America isn't conducive to this. And this is the word sneis, which means modesty. And it's not, there is a form of modesty, of course, about like in clothing and how you dress, but this is not talking about dressing over here. It's talking about, and when I say in America, we're very into fame and into you're not important if you're not in the you don't get lots of attention, and it's but Judaism believes in a certain modesty of going in a quiet way,
humility.
It's like humility, but it's what does he call it here? Walking humbly. Oh, that's he says that humbly. We call it we have a tradition that the greatest people in the world are hidden tzaddikim. There are certain hidden righteous people, and it means that these people, they're not famous. Like, you don't know, you could stumble on a person and he could be the greatest one of the greatest people alive, and he's just going about his business. He doesn't brag about it. He doesn't tell people. Nobody knows the challenges they face. And that person, he's our hero. He's the, because there's something about doing things quietly. When we serve Hashem, we don't have a need to broadcast it to other people. We don't have a need to tell people. When something is right, it's not right because I can brag about it to other people. It's right because I did the right thing. The person is quiet about that. They go in a certain modesty. They go quietly. When you think about it, we respect it when we see it. There are certain people that have just unassuming. You know, they're just quiet how they do things. And there's something special about that. There are other people, they have this need to brag, and they have this need to do things in a fancy way. And that's really not it. I can't say it's necessarily a sin, but the qualities that we have to seek, first, we have to try to do what's right. We have to try to be honest. We have to try to not to take things that don't belong to us. That's mishpat. Then we have to try to be givers. We have to try to love giving. And then the third thing is we have to seek to walk humbly, seek to not need to brag, not need to broadcast, but just, you know... What?
Brachos.
Yeah, brachos. But just be... You have to be internally happy. You have to focus on I don't need, my happiness isn't dependent on other people knowing what I did. It isn't depending on broadcasting what I do. I know that I'm imitating my Creator, and so I am etznei lechus. I'm going with the modesty. I'm going with the humility. And who's my partner in all of this? Im Elokecha. I'm together with Hashem. That's the way you imitate Hashem, a person dedicates their life to these three pillars. And so that's he's kind of giving us his analogy of what's important. Like I said, you don't always see this in society. There are a lot of people that they have other qualities or other attitudes, but these are attitudes we work on. Now, I would say there has been a change that it used to be that people... there were a lot of people, everybody knew the right things, so they didn't need to tell other people. So sometimes it's important to tell other people because maybe they'll want to join in. So for example, if somebody gives money to the shul, so if one person gives, someone else will say, well, if he gave and he's not that rich and look what he did, you know what, I should be giving too. Or they say, well, if not enough people give, so it must be it's not such a good, worthy cause. And so in those cases, you do need to do things publicly because doing them publicly encourages other people to do them. So there are cases where it's important to do things publicly, not because you want to brag and not because you want to show off, but because it'll encourage other people to participate. And it's tricky. But today, in many cases, they encourage people to do things in an open way so that more people will join or more people. And you kind of have to know when is it best to do it quietly and not tell anybody and nobody should know. And when should you, maybe I'll put it out there and other people will want to join in, or they'll see that I'm doing it, or someone had this idea to do something good and they'll join in. And it is, that's not a contradiction to this. It really depends on why a person wants to do it. But you'll see both out there, and it confuses people because if this doesn't apply, and you can just do a good deed quietly and feel good about it, and you don't have to broadcast it, and you don't have to make a big deal about it, that's really the quality we respect. The unassuming, humble person that walks with Hashem, it's him and Hashem, he does it because this is how he imitates his creator, and this is how he wants to be. And then there are other times where if you do it, other people want to join in, and people think that nobody does these kinds of things, and when they see that you're doing it, they'll do it also. So a person needs to evaluate what's each time, whether it's best to do it in the humble, quiet way, or there are times when you got to go public where you have to try to encourage others to do it, and the only way you'll get other volunteers are if you put up a sign and say, you know, we're going to do these good things. Look how nice it was. Look what a difference we made. Maybe you want to join in. You know, so then you need to talk about it. So you kind of have to have the combination of both.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.